The following presentation was recorded at the 2013 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
We'll wait till they get those passed out there. While we're waiting, I'll tell you just a little bit about myself. My name's Mark Miller from Ohio, Sugar Creek, Ohio. I'm not a teacher, and I think this topic would lend well to a teacher. I'm a board member, but we'll do what we can. The teacher that we had lined up wasn't able to make it, and so I took this one rather than drop it. But I do think we can learn together, and we can take something out of this. Do we have enough handouts? Does everyone have one that you can see? It's a very simple handout. All I did is just give you a simple outline of what we'll be covering. If we have a few, Mark Kurtz said he'll make a few more, so if we do run out, he'll bring some more over. I'd like to facilitate the conversation here. I'd like some discussion as much as we can. I know that will be a little difficult, but we'll do the best we can, and I'd like to hear from you if this is something you are familiar with. Especially the teachers, I'd like for you to feel free to express things you do or if they happen. When you think of healthy student relationships, avoiding cliques, exclusiveness, and mocking, it's things that we don't normally, we know they're there, we know it happens, but we tend to not quite know how much of it's going on. Board members don't find out a lot about it, teachers more, probably not as much as the students. Just checking in with some people as I was studying this for this topic. I checked with board members, and their typical response was, yeah, probably happens in their school some. Don't think we have a big problem with it. Just not something we really deal with. I'm sure it happens. Talk to teachers. Yeah, we know it happens. Not quite sure how to deal with it sometimes. We do with the best we can. Then I talk to students, and they give examples of how it happens. And so it happens, and we have Christian schools. We want to look at some of the things we're looking here. What I'd like to do simply is look at mocking and bullying. In the public schools, you hear a lot about bullying and things to avoid there. Mocking, we always, in Pennsylvania Dutch, we always called it spotting. It's something I always use. Next one is exclusiveness and cliques. How they form, what some things to avoid, and maybe some things, some behavioral things we can do to minimize that. And then also just look a little bit at healthy student relationships / school culture. There's some things I think we can do school-wide to minimize some of these problems. They're not saying that it'll go away, but I think we can minimize some. I'll just read a quote here as I was looking, as I was studying this, and I got this off some stats. It said, intensified by the inescapable reach of the internet, bullying has spun out of control. It allegedly triggered the suicides gave a few different examples here, and then it said two stories that rocked the bullying epidemic into the national spotlight. An epidemic that causes 160,000 children a day across the U.S. to stay at home from school because they're afraid of being bullied. Bullied to the point where they're actually afraid to go to school. They don't want to go to school. They don't like school because there's someone or something there that they're afraid of. And it's driven some, to commit suicide. This is in public schools. We say we don't have that problem, or at least not as much. That's part of the reason we want to have our private schools. May I suggest that we do have some of it in our schools, and I think we can all think of a person who at one time was in our church, in our community, that has fallen away from the faith. And as you look back on that person, they were possibly the type that struggled in school. They didn't get good grades. Maybe they weren't very good athletically. They didn't fit in the in group. And as they grew up, they left the faith and now are out in the world somewhere. My guess is you all have at least one person in mind like that. You know we could have done better. There are people like that among us that struggle to fit in. And what we want to do is try to bring those in and make so they feel comfortable in our school. Our school should be a haven for them, not something that they are afraid to go or where it creates stress because of the relationships there. Talking a little bit about cliques here. What is a clique? I'll just grab a dictionary example here, and it says a small group, exclusive group of friends or associates to form, or among youth especially. A clique is a social group most often seen in junior high and high school settings, and generally more often noted among girls than boys. Tends to be more bullying going on in the boys and more cliques and relationships like that in girls. It said 5 or 6 people who interact with each other more regularly, intensely than others in the same setting. We all have good friends, but when it becomes really close is when it, in a larger settings, when it's difficult. Talking just a little bit about cliques, what I'd like to do is we'll just go in, and I have it listed here as investigate, evaluate, understand, transform. Very simple. What I'd like to do is just go down through this, and I'll run maybe down through this and maybe stop for discussion as we can as we go along. Okay, cliques especially tend to be worse in older students, and it's often more dramatic in girls. We know that they tend to form closer relationships, more open with them, and just some examples I notice just in our school, we have about 81 students from 9 different churches. There's different, especially in high school, there's youth groups that have 5 or 6 students that attend our school. And then there's other youth groups over here. So there's a tendency to group up in family or even some extended family or youth groups. Maybe the honor roll students or the senior class tends to group together. Students that just, they kind of have a lot in common, so they kind of do a lot together. Those are a lot of the things that would maybe be an example of some cliques that could form. And it's often a student just simply looking for a sense of belonging. They want to belong somewhere. So they surround themselves with people like them. And we do the same thing. We surround ourselves with friends that think like us. It's easy to do that. We're going through the process of adopting right now. And some of our training or some of the way we look at things, they challenge us to look at the people around us and to really notice how many people around us are just like us. We had to do a very simple, basic object lesson where we took beads and we put beads in people like us, and anyone that was like us was one color. And then the other color beads were people that were thinking different. So I have very few close friends that are non-Christians. I have very few close friends that are non-Anabaptist. I have very few close friends that are even black. We don't think of how much we surround ourselves with friends like us. Not saying that's all bad, but what happens is that's the tendency that happens in a school. We surround ourselves with people, and they surround themselves with people that think like them. Also, students look to form their own identity in school. They're trying to form who they're trying to figure out who they are. So if someone is good athletically, they like to hang out with them. If someone is in the in-group, they like to be with them because they think it maybe would make them kind of be the same way as them. What are some ways that we can transform that? What are some ways we can avoid that? And I have some examples here, but like to hear just a little bit of feedback from you. Have you noticed, especially maybe some of your teachers, have you noticed some cliques in your schools? What would happen, or does it happen? Is it? Do you have some there? Just give a little bit of time here and see if we can get a little bit of discussion going. We'll go on and maybe come back to a little bit when we get to the bullying. I have a couple examples here that I wrote down, and I forget what all I wrote in the handouts. But the honor roll example at Maranatha Christian Schools, where I'm a part of, what we have done in our honor roll, we've noticed that it tended to form students that did really well together. When I grew up, I went to a small school, and we had our honor roll system was very... created distinct lines. We had a lot of honor roll students. They had their own quarterly activity. They did a lot of things together. It was a big deal to be on the honor roll. And you kind of formed friendships around that. And we try to avoid that. One of the ways we do this at our school is we simply have a class honor roll. We reward the ones that do, but it's a class. The entire class has to be, I think it is at 83% right now. So 83% of our high school students and junior high students have to be on honor roll for there to be an honor roll activity. Then it's for the whole school. So there's a tremendous amount of teamwork and community. Now there can be students that don't do so well, but they are pushed. It's a tremendous. You look toward the end, week 7 and 8, they know what they need to do to get on honor roll, and there's a lot of pushing and teamwork. And come on, let's do this. We can do this. And if they make it, if they have 83% of the available honor rolls throughout the year used up, then they get to go to a trip to D.C. We have smaller things we can do with them if they don't make that. But it's a big deal. And that has changed a lot of the way we look at honor roll in our school. Not saying it's the right way to do it, but it's something we've done. We've tried to tone this down a bit. One of the things I know that Gerald had told me that they do at Faith Builders, and that's they do chapel groups. And what they do simply is beginning of year, they divide each student up into a chapel group, and it's chapel. It's from grades 1 through K. There will be small groups of students interacting, young first graders interact, being in the same group as the 12th graders, and they interact together a lot. They do a lot together. They have chapel together, and what it does, it creates a sense of community throughout the school. Those are, I think, some things, some very practical ways that we can maybe do to avoid cliques. Sometimes eating lunch at school in the cafeteria, you know how that works. You get down there, first couple people, they get their corner, and it kind of, if it becomes a big problem, just assign seats. That can, and some of these are maybe drastic moves. We don't have to do them, you know, if it's not an issue. We noticed in our junior high school, we noticed that we did a lot of study part, especially for Bible quizzing. We paired up for study partners. And so what was happening is they were pairing up with really close friends. And so we said, look, you know, that's fine, but we're gonna pair you up. And so just a more of a, and we'll switch that around. We have them together for a while, and then we'll switch it up. Just mix it up, in different activities. I think another thing that is a big thing is communication between co-teachers. It is amazing. We have, we have 8 teachers and a secretary, and it is amazing how they can come to school, do their thing. They have their meeting in the morning and really not connect a lot with each student. They'll be out. They have recess at different times. Some of the classrooms have recess together, but there's very easy to be disconnected from the other teachers around you. And I think communication between co-teachers is a big thing, especially if you have guys, some fellows teach, brothers teaching a classroom, and then sisters teaching a classroom. I know we had an incident last year in our 5th and 6th grade class. We noticed there was a little bit of some of the girls were hanging their heads together, and there were some issues. You know, 5th and 6th grade girls, and it's all drama. And what happened there is we simply went to the teacher and asked him, you know, what's he said he had, and he really didn't have a clue what was going on. He didn't notice it. We asked a couple of the lady teachers, and they said, oh, absolutely, they've noticed it, but they really didn't know how to approach it. And what happened there is we weren't communicating. It was just a very simple problem. It's a very easy fix, just being aware of the problem, mixing it up a little bit. But it really tends to polarize if you don't connect. So communication between co-teachers is a good thing. Positive school culture is something, and we're going to talk about that a lot more later, so I think we'll go on. But maybe I'll go back to a little bit to the communication between co-teachers. Make it a place, It's we don't have this, but it's one of our goals for next year to have a place where our teachers can come to a central location to grade their papers. They can be in their classroom, but try to have a lounge or somewhere where they can come together to just informally interact. Something we're working toward, because I think that would build up communication. Just informal. We asked the teachers to have a wish list. We're going through a bit of a remodeling, and that was number one on their wish list. We want a place where we can come together, we can connect, where there's maybe a few tables or desks, that we can just after school do some of our checking here with each other instead of each one being in their own classroom. How many of you teachers would like that? It's not hard to do. Get up a room, library or somewhere, and that is something they said, look, let's do that, because it's just that open communication that we would that would be good. Let's move on to mocking and bullying, and then we'll try to get some more discussion as we maybe toward the end here. And there again, I simply have the teachers need to investigate, understand, evaluate, and transform. And I have down here again that this thing where I ask the school board members, and they say, yeah, it happens, doesn't happen too much. And I ask the teachers and then the students, and they had responses like, I think of one student, he's a married man now, first child on the way. I asked him, I said, did you have an issue with mocking or being bullied, or can you think of things in your school or when you were growing up? And he said, absolutely. He said he went to in our school, we have our public school. Our East Holmes district has schools that are exclusively Amish. Amish schools funded and staffed by the public school, but it's just Amish students going there. Okay, so, and he went to one of those schools. So it's a Anabaptist, it's actually just Amish or some Mennonite students, but ran by and staffed by the public school district. But he said one day on the bus to school, he inadvertently sat on another student's bag of cookies, and he never thought of it. But he said, "I got the nickname Cookie Cruncher that stuck with me for the rest of that year." He said, "Looking back, that was just a bad experience." And we think, "Well, that Cookie Cruncher is really not that, but it was a big deal to him, and it really bothered him enough that 15, 20 years later, he still remembered it." So that happens. I think of another. I wasn't exempt from it. He said, I remember sitting beside a student and I didn't like him, or he had some bad habits. He said he kind of had body odor. He said he tended to pick his nose. He said he was one of those students that just didn't fit in. He said, I was supposed to sit right beside him. I moved my desk. And he said he had to see it. He said it was very obvious to everybody else. And it was kind of funny, you know, this titter of laughter went through the schoolroom. And he went back to that student and apologized later. But so often, the students that get bullied or mocked, they too tend to be leaders in mocking others. Think of another one. Marcia DeLong was a student, was a community girl that attended the same school I did. She... We had several community people that non-Mennonite background people that attended our school, and she was not very good at any kind of sports, and it came to the place where she refused to go out during the day in recess. She'd rather work, and I look back on that and I say, well, the main reason is because she didn't fit in there, but the teacher didn't do anything about it. And I look back and said, wow, that was looking back now, I was like, well, that really needed to be dealt with. We as students knew what was going on, but, you know, we didn't realize how much we could hurt her. Just so I'm going to say, if you're involved in school, assume it's happening in school at least a little bit. It's happening there some. Where is it happening? I think a question I asked to our students, I said, where is it happening? It's what they had three places where it happens is what they told me. They said, it happens a lot on the bus. No students there, bus driver can't see it. And so there's things happening. And on the bus was number one. They said, we have one recess, a 15-minute recess that's normally unsupervised. They said, well, there's a teacher out there, but the students are all over, and they said they can't see everything. So that's when it happens. So I think it happens when the teachers aren't around. And you can't be everywhere all the time. I understand that. maybe extracurricular activities for the upper classmen, times when they get together to do things other than just school, those same activities were going on. And another thing I have here is who is most likely to get picked on? Pay attention to the isolated students, the ones that they're on the edge of your, you know who they are. You really do. They're the ones that don't quite fit in. They come from maybe a home that has a different background. Those people have a hard time fitting in our churches, too. They really do. There's some hurts out there, and we don't do so good in bringing them in and really making them feel a part of ourselves. Students that maybe dress different than others. Maybe they come from a more conservative background or even a more liberal background. To students, students can be cruel. Children can be cruel to someone that's a little different than them. Students with learning disabilities. We had an issue a couple years ago with a student that had dyslexia. And he really struggled getting along with other students. He was a bully, but he was also bullied as well. And he was picked on a lot. Students that struggle athletically, I think, are ones that tend to get picked on. Students that have maybe habits that other students make fun of. And then who's mocking others? Have a few here. Simply student leaders. These students are natural kind of leaders. They always seem to be out in front. They are the ones that other students try to emulate. They have a crowd around them. They're the ones that if there's a game or something happening, they'll be the ones out front and pushing that. They tend to be natural leaders. And we can maybe make them leaders in things other than this. Give them, if you see that ability, try to cultivate it instead of just totally tone it down. Students that find it hard to fit in. I think of an incident back in my school days again. And by the way, I had a lot of really good experiences, but I'm bringing out, I guess, some of the bad things here so we know what we're looking for. I think of it, there was a family that attended our church. They were from from town. They attended our church, and the parents became members there in our church. They were from a Mennonite background. They stood out. Our church didn't need to wear broadfall pants. But they had to. They had to wear broadfall pants and suspenders, and they really struggled with that. They were made to look different. Their dad was crippled, and they lived on a limited income. And I remember Jimmy Danuet was one of the little boys' name. He really struggled in school. He was just there. He wasn't necessarily a slow learner, but he just really struggled. So, and not only did he struggle, but he was one of the leaders when it came to picking on other children. I remember another little boy that was a foster child of one of the other our church families, and he had some health problems, and he was a little. He was a chubby little boy, and I just remember the phrase, and if I think of Robbie Dean was his name, I think of Robbie Dean, the big fat jelly bean. I remember hearing that phrase from when, of course not when the teachers were around, but that's what they called him. Not only Jimmy, other students did it as well, but Jimmy, he had trouble fitting in, so he was a leader in mocking and bullying others. I think there's some root things going on here. Some of the root causes. And I talked to a teacher that was teaching school for 10 years. She's no longer teaching now, but she observed, and this was some. I'll just read some of the observations that she had. She said some observations that I had. It says in the past several years, audiovisual media has inundated our churches. DVDs and other computer-based media, and students learn behavior from these highly stimulating forms of socialization. Disrespect in America is funny, and the basis of the entertainment history. We see all the comedy and the satire going on out there. It's funny to students. If they see someone laughing at others, they tend to copy that. And it says, next one of her observations, where teachers are not used to this sort of flat-out rebellion and don't know how to deal with it. Said most of them don't deal with it head-on. They'll deal with it, but maybe not right at the time. Another one she had was parents would not uniformly support teachers in discipline because it inadvertently condemns their at-home program, which she said would allow some of the things and things that are happening at home was carrying to school is what she was saying. And this was one I think that was interesting. She said, an attitude that we are better than public schools and therefore privileged to discard some of these structured programs. For example, she said, at recess, I've observed that sometimes some schools have no supervisor out there all the time, and that's especially when students mock others. Teachers in public schools are fired for letting this stuff slide, and it's not a big deal in some of our schools. And I think maybe there's some truth to that. We think it's not bad, and so we don't really watch for it. I think we really need to watch for it and be aware that it is happening. Okay, I think we've talked a little bit about identifying the cause. And another thing, I think, if a student's not fitting in, I think we can do a lot of things to help that. But another quote from a non-Anabaptist person that talked to about this topic, and he works a lot with us, okay, as people. He's not, I'll just read it, this quote. It says, quote from a non-Anabaptist person that works a lot in a lot of our communities. It says, we have talked about this before, but it seems there's a lack of buy-in among Anabaptist people. A constant wondering if there's some other program out there that would be better. Children sense this and tend to pick on anyone who appears to be supporting the distinctives of the particular fellowship they're in, since they are subconsciously deemed to be naive. And what I think he's saying here, and I asked him a little bit, this was his quote, and I asked him to clarify, and he said, well, it seems like sometimes we're a bit insecure about our own identity. We tend to apologize to the public about it. Our students, our children pick that up. And when they see someone in school or whatever it is, maybe dressing different, they pick on those differences. They realize that they connect that mom and dad don't really think that's necessary to do that. And then they'll pick on that. And I think that's a challenge to us. What can we do to avoid this? What are some things we can do as a school to minimize this? Any comments from any of you? What have you done, or what in your school to, or is this not a problem, or some observations I should say to this? Okay.
How much do we see this as a moral issue? Because if we see this as primarily a social issue, then the appeal is be nice.
Yeah, gotcha.
Or do we see this as a moral issue? It is wrong, and therefore we take action to make it stop, like we would cheat. Morally wrong. Now, it's hard to quantify this whole thing in ways that cheating is.
Right. It's very, yeah. Gotcha.
I understand. But that's a question that I have.
Okay.
Have you, as teachers, said that this will stop? And it's going to stop. Bring in the parents, bring in the consequences. Or is it something you just kind of swat out year after year? I've gone to school most of my adult life. I'll admit it's the single biggest drain of my emotional character as I watch this play out in a fairly large school.
Mm-hmm.
We're hard at it, but boy, you can't kill it.
Yeah.
And I know you can't.
How do you get that?
Okay.
Thank you.
In which this isn't something that just buzzes and swat at, but it's something that will make serious and say, action must stop.
Okay.
That's a hard question.
I'll just repeat the question. If we just address this socially, are we really addressing the root maybe? Is this from a moral standpoint? How do you, as teachers, what are some ways, how do you do this? Is this a time when you can... is this where Matthew 18 comes in? Will we get the parents in? We have a conversation. Simply, where it says there, if thy brother transgress against thee, tell you know, get your fault in front and talk about it. Is this some other question?
I'm Paul. Interested in hearing how do the parents feel about it.
Okay.
Not just how the teachers feel about it. Is it a moral issue?
Okay.
There's the place to start
addressing. Is it a moral issue? Parents, teachers, let's have some discussion here on that. How do we address that as a moral issue as opposed to just a social issue? We've got some time.
It's really hard to identify actually what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But if you cut it off in public, you don't know what happened when you're not there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe this is the easy way out, but I was going to suggest that I think it's both.
Okay.
I think it starts as a one, but if left unchecked, it will become a moral issue.
Okay.
In other words, children will be children, to a point. But if it continues and continues, I think it becomes a moral issue.
Okay. Elmer's suggesting that it starts out maybe as a social issue where children can be children. And I've heard that say, look, you know, that's not a big deal. Children will be children, you know. But when does it become a moral issue? So as a parent, we need to be examples to our children. So
deal with it.
Okay, follow you.
And it's sad that today, you know, I don't want to talk about the minister, but because he's including me as a parent,
mm-hmm.
sometimes just to be, like he said, be nice. Be nice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deal with that thing. If you don't, you know, that's a cancer. You have to stop that cancer. Otherwise, it will spread around. Stop it right there.
Catch it right there, okay? Is this serious enough what his thing is? We need to get it and stop it right there, and as parents, we need to deal with the same thing. And is this something that, does this warrant a conference with the parents? Go ahead, Anthony. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, trust me.
But I appreciate the discussion. Often this problem, I think, comes out of the home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I think of all the years I've taught in, all these different groups, there are times that the clicks around sports or disrespect or guys and girls. Like
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Those to me are the three things yep. that I watch clicks. It's either silly girls about boys.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's disrespect for the teacher or mocking certain people for sports. If you're cool.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How often is this carried over? Who hangs out at the cabin together?
Mm-hmm.
Who does stuff endlessly together? Okay, and so it's set already. I can go to our school and go right down to my third grade and see
yeah.
this thing form.
Yeah.
So, there it is again.
Mm-hmm.
Siblings of the older kids.
Sure.
Right down through. So now we've got now this gets a lot broader than dealing with it at school.
Okay.
So when is the last time that
okay.
The teacher can help the student to understand the issue, but the ministry and the school board needs to help the parents to understand the issue. It's not beyond the teacher communicating.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But to help them understand the weight and the issue, it needs to be the school board and the ministry.
Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to say that what happens in school, like Anthony said, is a reflection of what happens in our churches, in our communities. What are we doing to address that in our churches? Is it the school? Should the school be a leader in this? I mean, we have to address what's in school. Is it needed? Do we need to have some dialogue between teachers and school board members and ministry and really, because this is a big issue.
One thing I think we can muddy is if the school, if teachers try to fix the parents.
Okay.
You're starting to tread on toes there that you may not have authorization to tread on. But if you have clear-cut rules at school and if you can explain to parents that this is the way it is here and that, and if they can get the hint that maybe there's something further than that, that's about as far as we can take it as teachers. From there, it would have to go to the church.
Okay.
And,
be dealt with. So often the lack of support for authority in school is you're going to have that same problem in our home, and the ministers know that that's the issue in the school's home as well. Yeah, right. I like that. Do y'all hear that quote? That's one we need. The adults will be children too, but we have the social skills to cover it. Okay, so it's a problem. We need to have this. There's also a thing of maturity. I think maybe there is some room for, and children will be a little bit different. There's some of this is a maturity issue. You can cut some of this off really quickly, young. Say, look, you don't do that. It's absolutely wrong to do that. But as they grow, it becomes, if left unchecked, I think it will become a bigger problem. Okay, gotcha. Sure. Okay. What's going on? Okay. Okay. Saying that that the teacher and the student needs to know that the child and parent really know child and that the parent and teachers know the issue and have a good handle on it. Okay. Correct. Okay. Yeah. That he doesn't care. Correct. So what do we do when it's a big problem in school? Dad doesn't care. He's not going to do anything about it. Okay. But how do we deal with it? We do have to deal with it, but how? How are we going to deal with this? Sure. Well, you can see where the issue is there, yeah.
Sometimes a teacher, more than I was, mm-hmm. maybe a case where the student wants you to think that his parents don't care. And what's in reality, he wants his parents to care, but he wants you to think they don't.
So okay. So you don't punish him. Okay, go to the parents. Okay. So you're saying there's some times when the student, you'll approach him about something. Well, go ahead, talk to my dad. He won't care. And you know, if you really take him up on it, dad will care more than you think. Okay. Even though it steps on your toes as well. Okay, gotcha. So let your teachers know that you're behind them, you support them. Got a few more minutes here. Let's talk a little bit about what can we do. Let's say we realize the problem is much bigger than just school. It is. Okay, what can we do at school, though, to minimize? Maybe we can educate students, and sometimes the students can educate the parents a little bit on some of these issues. You've seen that happen. Dad knows it's a problem. He realizes all of a sudden his child has conviction on this or is talking about it, and he's convicted. It's happened to me. Students come home, they challenge me about something, And okay, yeah, all right. Well, that's an area I really need to watch myself if they're watching, doing it. What are some ways we can, at school, on a school level, address these issues? So you challenge them to raise the bar on their part.
And also set the expectation that we're watching how you're improving.
Another dynamic on that, I think, is tend to be the students that are leaders. If they're recognized as a leader and you ask them for their help in, you know, they can take some of that responsibility and maybe feel responsible, take a little bit of ownership in the problem.
We had the middle school and high school boys and girls separate once a week for devotionals. Have one of the sisters teach the girls and someone teach the boys. And then you can get into some of these topics a lot more personally.
Correct. Excellent. Good suggestion there, where you can have a separate devotional and really address them very clearly with them.
Because some of these do cross the gender line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think another thing that can be helpful is have a way that a student can anonymously let the teacher know. A lot of students are afraid to tell the teacher what's going on because they're afraid some pushback will be there. I had one student, an issue we had on the bus one time, a dad called me and said, look, there's a problem on one of the buses, and he said, "What? My daughter doesn't want to be known as the one that told you what was going on." Okay, it was a big deal to her. Okay, she's a very conscientious young lady. It really bugged her, but she didn't come forward for a long time because she was afraid the others would retaliate against her. So I said, look, don't worry, no one will know who it was. And we dealt with the problem, we took care of it. And they didn't ask who it was, maybe they did without us knowing, but make a way so the students can anonymously connect with their parents or a teacher or something like that. I don't know if you can do not necessarily a survey, but a way that they can do that. Even educate, sometimes in class discussions, bring it up. You have a lot of times in your classrooms, you'll have an informal discussion. That's a good topic to bring up and share. Devotions, like Elmer said. I think sometimes we have stories like the Samaritan woman, Jesus and the Samaritan woman. The Samaritans were hated by the Jews. Tremendous cross-culture interaction there. And that whole issue, Jesus and the 12 disciples. I mean, those disciples were a diverse group. I mean, they literally, in the zealots and the disciples and the tax, look at that group sometime. The dynamics of disaster are there. But Jesus was able to pull that together. Those are tremendous examples we could bring into the schoolroom. Zacchaeus is a good one for young children. They understand. Zacchaeus was so short, he had to climb a tree. There's probably students in your schools that are called shorty or, you know, little guy or something. And they connect with that stuff. Very, very practical. Bible. There's a tremendous amount of Bible verses that we can use to connect, or examples in Scripture. In Romans, it says we're to accept each other as Christ accepted us. Any other closing comments here? We are right up against time. Any other comments? Anthony, yes, sir.
I just appreciate you bringing that up, because we can use emotional appeal. How would you like to be treated like that?
Excellent, yeah.
A lot of emotional appeal, that some of that is okay, but really going to the Bible and saying, treat others like you want to be treated.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent, yeah, great, thank you. Anyone else? Okay. is 11 o'clock, and let me just see here. The 11:15, so you can feel free to take a break. Be back in here at 11:15 for the next session. Thank you for your participation.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.